Okay, $20 million a year for 10 years, then 2 million dollars
a year for 10 years.
Okay.
So then $68 million per year for 10 years.
So he's going to make less than 3% of his amount in the time he's playing in that contract, and then make the vast majority of it after the contract ends. My question is, and I kind of plug this into the deflation isn't the word, what that money will be worth. I mean, $68 million is going to be worth a lot in a long time. Don't get me wrong.
Right, but so let's say he were to make the $70 million per year.
Right.
It would be $68 million in 10 years.
It's going to be worth about 78% of what it is now, okay, which is still not nothing.
Right.
And then at the end of it, roughly 60%. So the Dodgers get a little bit of a deal on this, just the fact that inflation is going to eat away at how much that is worth.
Yeah,
it's still a lot.
It's still a ton, and it reportedly gets around $50 million a year on endorsements anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll get his $2 million base pay and then all the endorsement money and all of that. But, yeah, I mean, he is basically, it's $700 million,
yeah,
but it's could be more. I mean, you'd be better at explaining it. But we all get it, right? There's no interest being paid on it, and it's very interesting. I mean, look, it helps the Dodgers a ton. There's
right,
a competitive balance tax in Major League Baseball. There's no salary cap, meaning you can spend as much as you want, but once you go over a certain threshold, you get taxed. And this lowers, I think, what it equates to on the books per year, about $46 million a year.
Is what he'll be.
Which is what would be on the Dodgers' books.
Right, which is roughly maybe what he was going to get if it was paid
out in full, right? Like, because the guess was around there, maybe around $45, $50 million. So, look, I mean, either way, it's a fascinating deal, right? We've never seen anything like this. Very interesting.
I wonder if we'll see more things like this in the future. I don't know.
I think, too, don't forget this when the next collective bargaining agreement goes down in baseball, because right now there's no rules against deferred payments, and if teams want to find ways, little loopholes, things. But you know, in 10 years, all of a sudden the Dodgers are like, okay, we got $68 million, right, for Otani. Remember that guy? We got to pay him now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Iridia brought up a good point that in those 10 years, you win a couple world championships, perhaps. You're going to make a lot of money on the front end as a Dodgers organization.
Of course, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the idea. This, I guess,
right?
Part of Otani, he was one who kind of came up with this because he wants them to stay competitive and add more to the roster.
I know we got to get to weather traffic, but let me give the question of the day really quickly. Only three baseball players in history have earned the highest salary in their league for 10 years or more. Babe Ruth was paid the most for 14 baseball seasons, A-Rod for 12, and this man made the most money in baseball 11 times, and his top-out salary was $135,000. Who am I talking about? 312-981-7200. Really quickly, try and get an answer to the question of the day. Only three baseball players have earned the most in their league, in Major League Baseball, for 10 or more years. Babe Ruth did it 14 times. A-Rod was the top earner 12 times. Who did it 11 times? Kevin, what is your guess?
Mickey Mantle.
No, it was not Mickey Mantle. 312-981-7200 if you've got a guess. Gina Heap joins us now, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, but a native of the Chicago area. Gina, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Always good talking to a fellow Chicagoan here, even though now you're at the Wall Street Journal doing big-time things and writing a really interesting article. And look, the debate about buying a home versus renting is a age-old one that people argue about, and they will for some time. But right now, the numbers really are skewed, maybe a little bit more in favor than renting than they have been in a while, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a really difficult market right now for buying a home. New mortgage payments, the average new mortgage payment in this country is about 50% higher than it is to rent. So it's definitely skewed that way.
50% higher than it was to renting. It wasn't all that long ago that they were even leasing outpaced owning, right?
Right, exactly. We saw home prices go up quite a bit during the pandemic, but at that point, at least mortgage rates were low. But we've seen with the Fed's rate hikes, mortgage rates skyrocket up to nearly 8% this fall. And that has really changed the math in a really difficult way for buyers.
It's really changed who is buying. I was shocked at the amount of Well, not that how the age has gone up for the first-time home buyer. I think that's a narrative we've been following, and I'm sure you guys have been following for a long time. But I was shocked at how quickly the jump is for how old the repeat buyer is now, too, Gina. Like, it's just getting older and older for first-time buyers, second-time buyers, third-time buyers.
Exactly. Across the board, it's going up. And with first-time buyers, the average was 35 years old, and that was the second highest on record, only after last year, which was 36. So it's creeping up pretty fast, but you're right that it's going up across the board. So,
yeah, for sure. Okay, what if someone says, well, look, yes, interest rates are higher, and I know the Fed isn't talking quite yet about when they're going to lower rates, but they will come down at some point is the conventional wisdom. That's going to even things out. People can refinance. Their payments are going to be lower. And look, their mortgage rate is pretty much set. Yes, your taxes will go up and your insurance will go up. But then you're set for 30 years. But renting's not going to be set for 30 years.
That's right. Yeah. There are definitely, that is a big pro to homeownership. Homeownership is also, you know, one of the number one ways that, you know, people are able to build wealth in this country. So I think that there are a lot of people out there for whom it's not much of a debate. It's just they really can't get into the market. They can't afford it. So
yeah, one of the complex things is that they've raised these interest rates, and usually that has a response of, well, does it usually lower prices? And this time it just isn't doing that.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's important to note that this is not the first time that mortgage rates have been this high. In fact, at some points in history, they've been double what they are now. But it is the first time, you know, in a couple of decades that they've been above 7%. And at the same time, that unique dynamic that you just mentioned is happening, where we've seen rates go up really fast, but home prices are not going down. And, you know, typically during a rate cycle, when mortgage rates go up by that much, home sales slow and then prices soften as a result. But this time that's not happening because there's really, really low inventory out there. You have a dynamic where, you know, also sellers don't want to give up, you know, low rate 2% mortgages. So they're holding on to homes longer, and there's just not enough to go around, really.
You say that the average monthly new home payment is 50% higher than rent. And one might say, boy, well, renting sounds great. Renting's gone more expensive too. I mean, like, there's not an easy way out of this for anybody.
Right. It's really tough. And like I said, you know, with that, you know, wealth gap, this could really worsen it because homeownership is so important, especially for younger generations to start to build equity in something. So,
and you mentioned that younger generation forbearance just ended on college loans a month or so ago. Young people really starting to see those bills pile up.
Yes, exactly.
All right, Gina, we appreciate it. Anything else that we need to know?
Nope, keep an eye out there. I mean, the Fed's meeting this week. We'll see.
All right, Gina Heap from the Wall Street Journal. Appreciate your time. Let's try and get one more guess here to the question of the day. The baseball player, there's been three of them that have been the highest paid in their in the league for over 10 years. One was Babe Ruth. One was, let's find out, who was number three? It was A-Rod, Babe Ruth, and who, Chuck?
Ted Williams.
It's not Ted Williams, but Ted did get a big contract. Some people say he was the first to own or earn over $100,000. Some people say it was Gehrig. You know, some of the contracts are, we don't have published data that goes back that far, but it wasn't Ted Williams for the longevity. Thanks, Chuck, for playing. We appreciate it. Let's take a break. Three baseball players have been the highest paid in their league for over 10 years. Babe Ruth did it 14 times. A-Rod did it 12. Let's go to Dawn, who has a guess on who the third person was. Hey, Dawn.
Hi.
What are you thinking?
Pete Rose?
No, it wasn't Pete Rose. Good guess, though. Thanks for playing.
Thanks.
All right. Let's go to what I think is maybe one of the cooler names we've ever had here on Your Money Matters. Teofilo, am I saying that right, Teofilo?
Yes, sir. How you doing? Love the show. Hello, everybody in Chicago. I'm going with Bryce Harper, sir.
Bryce Harper, that's a great guess. Earlier in the program, I mentioned that this person who did it 11 times topped out at $135,000 a year. So I think that, well, by that, if you would have heard that part, you would have known that it wasn't Bryce Harper who made millions. But Teofilo, thanks for joining us.
All right. God bless you guys and be safe, everybody.
Hey, man. I like Teofilo. We need a Teofilo moment of the day. He's giving me some positive vibes. Bob's got a guess. Bob, how you doing, my friend?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. What are you? Are you cooking something back there?
Actually, I'm eating dinner.
What do you got? What's on the plate?
My wife made turkey yesterday. I'm having leftovers.
Delicious. Ooh, turkey in the middle of December, huh?
Well, that's because she's going to make ham for Christmas, and so it's like, I got the consolation prize for the turkey.
Is it pretty good? Is it moist? Is it good?
Oh, it's delicious. Turkey, stuffing, sweet potatoes. It's outstanding.
You're basically having Thanksgiving on December 11th.
I had second Thanksgiving in a month because we had it in Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we've strayed off the topic. Three baseball players in history over 10 years, Babe Ruth, Alex Rodriguez, and who was the third?
I'm going to go with the Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays.
And you have got the answer correct. That is correct. His final year, he topped out at $135,000 on his salary, but he did it 11 times. As the one of the highest, as the highest paid player in baseball. Bob, enjoy the rest of the meal and stay on the line, okay?
All right, thanks.
You'll be chatting with Iridian to get your prize. And the prize this week, let's give Bob a WGN Radio t-shirt. Okay, Iridian, really quickly, before you talk to Bob, I did want to play this clip earlier today on the Lisa Dent Show. Just a really great conversation with Tom Appel, good friend of our show, good friend of Steven, good friend of the station. He's on every show here. And they were talking about the idea that our cars are now as smart as our smartphones and collect just as much data.
Yeah, maybe as much as our smartphone, and to some degree, maybe a little bit more, because it knows how we drive. And we are slowly and perhaps incautiously giving up some of our privacy in the name of convenience and technology. And our car is one of those devices in our lives that knows so much about us, and that information generally is gathered in aggregate, and it's not used about us personally, but still we are contributing to the greater research of auto manufacturers and marketers without our consent. And I think it's worth a little bit of concern. To some extent, this will be used to like help marketers find out what we like, what we use. And if you see ads in some weird place, it's like, yeah, maybe your car did talk about you. And one of the interesting things is that it seems that younger consumers, especially those that were born into the smartphone generation, don't seem to care that much. They don't consider the information especially private or especially valuable, and they don't worry about it too much. But it seems like people more my age and maybe a little bit younger worry more about it because we're used to privacy and we don't really want marketers following us around. And this stuff is used in aggregate, and it's going to be used against us. And increasingly, manufacturers are talking about how they're going to sell this data or use it in the future. It is a source of revenue for car manufacturers.
It's an interesting conversation. I don't know if I'm quite in the younger generation anymore, but you would file me under the camp of, I don't know if I care all that much. Not that I don't love my data being out there and cars knowing how I drive and maybe other people getting that information. But let's be honest, people. If you're listening to this right now on your smartphone, someone's got a lot of your data. If you're on Facebook, someone's got a lot of your data. And maybe you're someone that cares every single time that comes up, and good for you, but keep it consistent. Because guess what? They are going through the House right now on appropriations bills to renew Patriot Act clauses, FISA clauses, how the foreign governments, how we spy on them, how they spy on us. So just keep it consistent. If you don't want your car having the data and sending it off to other people, then fight against the social media companies that do it as well. Europe has collectively done that. And you're in Europe, Facebook, Instagram, all that, they have a lot less data of ours than we do here. So if it matters to you for your car, just make it matter for everything else. And now I will get off my soapbox. Just jump right off. Jennifer Streaks joins us now here on Your Money Matters from Insider, talking about debt. And Jennifer, thanks for hopping on with us this evening.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me on.
I like this headline. Three signs debt is running your life, even if it doesn't feel like it. What prompted you guys to write this story? Is it a matter that some people don't quite know the stranglehold or at least the grips that debt has on them?
Yeah, I think that because we're seeing such an increase in everyday expenses from groceries to gas, transportation, just lunch, I think that people are just doing what they can to make it through the day, the week, the month, and they don't understand or they may not feel like they're racking up debt.
Mm-hmm. But they are. And you have three very telltale signs that, in fact, debt has more control over than you realize. What's number one?
Well, the first is that you are never paying your credit card off in full. You're always carrying a balance because ideally you should only charge to your credit card what you can afford to pay off. But if you're always carrying a balance, especially now with higher interest rates, which are definitely impacting and raising credit card interest rates, you're incurring interest charges, which means that it's just a cycle. You know, you're carrying this debt, you're paying higher interest on it, so it's going to make it harder to pay off in the long run.
I know some people that have multiple credit cards for very legit reasons. They've had some over the years. Maybe they got a store card, too, and they're like, well, you know, four or five of them I pay off on time, but there's that one I can't get ahead on. But I'm doing okay. No, one can do enough damage in and of itself, Jennifer.
Exactly. One can impact utilization greatly. If you're at the limit on that or near the limit, it's the same thing as if you had it spread out across four or five credit cards.
All right. So let's say we are, you know, we're not able to make all the payments. That's a sign that debt, or not make the payments in full every month. That's a sign that debt is a problem. What's number two?
No, number two is when you're getting even deeper in and now you start missing payments.
Altogether.
You might think, yeah, even just worse, because there are a small group of people out there that may think that a 30-day late is not a big deal, but it is, because that impacts your credit immediately. As soon as you miss that payment, it can be reported to the credit bureau and drop your credit score easily 30 to 80 points.
Whoa.
Just with that one missed payment. It really does have an impact. And if you find yourself missing payments, you've got to wait until the next paycheck to make that payment. This is a pretty big red flag that you're dealing or you're not dealing well with debt.
So we want people to pay way more than the minimum, but at the very least, you need to be making that minimum payment, because even one missed one, boom, you're down 80 points.
Correct. And not only making the payment, making it on time every time.
All right. I know that there's a lot of debate about what's a good credit score, what isn't. And, you know, there's a lot of different barometers out there to tell how you're doing. Is there like a hard, fast number where it's clear that debt is hurting your credit score enough that it's really starting to become a problem? Is there like a line in the sand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. If your credit score is below a 600, that's it. That is a big red light to stop what you're doing and really assess how your debt is impacting your life, because you are carrying, obviously you have lingering debt, your utilization is high, you're missing payments, and all of this is impacting your credit score. And this is something that's going to, it's really hard with missed payments. You're not just going to walk away from that. That can stay on your credit report for 7 years. So once you have that credit score, you look at it, it's below 600. You have numerous factors right now that's contributing to that credit score. And carrying debt from month to month, year to year, is the number one factor for that.
I appreciate each of these points, including that number, because I feel like there are people out there that maybe don't pay off their credit card in full every month. Okay, and you know that there's a lot of people like that. Maybe you miss a payment or two. Maybe you have a 580 score, but you're saying to yourself right now, "Yeah, but I'm treading water. I'm okay. Like I'm making it do." I think that we sometimes fail to realize, Jennifer, what these interest rates will do to us. That you can only tread water for so long.
And that's the thing. That's not the goal. The goal is not to tread water. Because if anything happens and you've backed yourself into a corner where you don't have anywhere to go, you lose your job, you get downsized, your hours get cut, you get sick. Now, you know, most people are living one paycheck away from a major catastrophe financially. And so if you have a low credit score, you don't have anywhere to go. You don't have anywhere to get a loan or a temporary anything if something happens, because that credit score is going to be a beacon to potential lenders that you are risky to do business with.
Right. I know this might seem like people are feeling helpless in these situations. There are different things you can do. You need to talk to your credit card companies. I know that, you know, seems like a crazy thing, but there's payment plans. I mean, there's ways to try and get a little ahead of this besides just clicking your heels and hoping more money falls from the sky.
Exactly. Talk to your creditors, But also, if you stop using the credit card, you may have to put it down for a little while and just walk away from it. Use the cash that you have in your bank account, because that's going to show you where your spending is going. And when the money's gone, you're done. You can't spend what you don't have. But credit cards give people a false sense of income. They're using it as an extension of their income, and that's not how it should be used.
Jennifer Streaks, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.